Well, hi there. Kate handed the mic to me, and I thought that maybe Ken would pick it up, but he didn't. So I'll take it. Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday evening. And, yeah, we really enjoy having Kate here, don't we? And Kate, you know, have a nice day. I understand you're going to a funeral, but you know, I don't know whose funeral, but I know that sometimes, you know, it can be a very genuine heart joining that happens at funerals. So have a nice day. And I'm here tonight only for half an hour because tonight is our monthly Awakening Together satsang. And tonight our guest is going to be Paul Hederman. So Jacqueline will be here with Paul Hederman in half an hour. And so I only have half an hour. So let me just jump right in and begin. I'm going to start the way I always start, is with music. And the song that I am playing tonight is Steve Winwood, Higher Love. So here we go.
Thank you.
So that's it. Bring me a higher love. And if you get some time, you might want to go into YouTube and look up the lyrics version of that song, Bring Me a Higher Love, and watch it. A friend sent it to me this morning. It's a song I've, you know, certainly heard in my lifetime, but not really paid a lot of attention to. Never listened to it well enough to hear the lyrics. And today when I looked at the lyrics version and paid attention, I thought, wow, those are incredible, incredible lyrics. And really listening to that song can increase that intense desire for liberation. So if you get a chance, go have a look. Not just a listen, but a look. All right, so tonight we are going to look at least 757, maybe 758. We'll see how much we cover in a short period of time. But here is the link to my journal for quote 757. And it's a very short quote from the Seven Steps to Awakening. To the wise, there is neither ego sense nor the world. To the wise, there is neither ego sense nor the world. And again, we've talked about ego sense as that sense of I, me, personal self. So this is saying there is no sense of an I, a me, a personal self, nor is there a sense of the world to the wise, which are the enlightened, I would say. So I'm going to go ahead and look at my journal. My journal says, I and the world are two. As long as there is I and the world, there is ignorance. Angry I and the world is ignorance. Joyous I and the world is ignorance. And listen to this last one. Spacious I and the world is ignorance. I may experience many shifts and changes as the mind accepts spiritual teaching and realization as truth. As mind observes its own shifts, it may perceive itself as enlightened. An enlightened mind is reflective of truth, but a reflection is not that which it reflects. A reflection that believes it is that which it reflects is deluded. Stay clear. I, at its best, reflects its source. The source itself knows only itself. So I can tell as I write these words, as I read these words, that these words were very, very clear to me, but that they could be confusing to someone else reading them. And that's the thing about words, huh? You know, words aren't always clear. So let me share what I was expressing. And I think you all know this. But there was a time, probably right at the beginning of my Seven Steps contemplation. I started contemplating the Seven Steps in 2012, or actually late 2011, I think, maybe. And so in early 2012, like around January, February, maybe even lasting into March of 2012, I was listening to teachers who were encouraging everyone to just claim enlightenment now. That's the only thing that's wrong is you haven't claimed it. You know, just claim it and it's done. And I and another friend of mine were listening to these teachers, and an idea crept into the mind, both in my mind and I think also in her mind. If she was here, I think she'd say, yeah, it happened to her too. An idea crept into the mind, and the idea was, I am enlightened. That was the idea. I am enlightened. And First of all, I always had an intuitive sense that the idea was wrong. And my friend and I, the friend who also had the idea during that 3-month period, we had many, many discussions about this. But had we not watched the idea carefully, had we not been on guard with our awareness and intuition, that idea could have taken root and it would have been a falsehood. And the reason I say it would have been a falsehood is because it would have been me, not you. I am enlightened. There was just still an I here. I don't know how else to say that. What I decided, and I think maybe my friend decided it too, although I don't remember as carefully with her, what I decided was to quit listening to those teachers that seemed to be encouraging this adoption of this concept as a truth. I decided to quit listening to them and to follow my own heart. I felt that my own heart is leading me on a genuine journey to genuine self-realization. And that just felt, again, more genuine. The word genuine has to be used here. That felt more genuine to me rather than stepping into the popular game of enlightenment. Since then, some of these teachers that were in that circle, I have seen some very strange things from some of these teachers, which I won't go into. But at least one of them, has publicly acknowledged that the idea that he was enlightened was concept only, and he has apologized for leading people down the wrong path. Some of the others have not done that, but they have done some very strange things, which I think actually signify that enlightenment is not there yet. So there's an artificialness. If you guys are watching my posts on sharing and contemplation together, you may have seen my post yesterday, which kind of was along those lines too. My post yesterday talked about how, some of those who are either thought to be enlightened, and actually that claim to be enlightened, some of those who claim to be enlightened do things I cannot understand. And I'll just give some general descriptions rather than getting into specifics where it might identify specific personalities. But general things that have happened many, many times are like, having sex with the followers, maybe with some kind of a promise, if you have sex with me, you'll be enlightened. Sometimes even having sex with the minors, the children of the followers. Other examples are things like requiring the followers give all of their money. If you don't give all of your money, then you have, you're still clinging to the ego, right? And then using that money to, buy myself better cars and buy myself, all in the name of it belongs to the group, but, guess who's driving the cars and sleeping in the nice house and all of that. Those are just some examples. And, people say, and I guess I don't know, right? How would I know? People say that that enlightenment can do those things. And I suppose until there's no I here, I won't know if that's true or not. But what I do know, and this is what my post said yesterday, what I do know is that's not my heart. My intuition tells me that there's a purity. There's a purity in the truly awakened mind. A purity that we might call God in our culture. But pure peace. Pure love. And unadulterated truth, not mixed with anything else. And that's what I have always sought. In fact, yesterday when I was doing my contemplation of the workbook lesson, and I don't remember now how I got led down this path, but I got led down the path of looking again to see what desires are in my heart. And when I looked again, what I found was, number one, is truth. I seek the truth, whatever it is. But number two is purity, or the way I have often worded this is to be only love. A truth that sexually abuses children or that takes money from other people for my personal benefit, it's just not what feels right to me. I don't see, I mean, if that's the truth, I suppose Regina's going to be disappointed. Heartbroken. But I don't think that it is. And I think that the teachers that I have always been attracted to demonstrate that purity. Of course, Jesus and Buddha are more ideas than anything else. Because, you know, none of us have ever been able to see them on film or in any way know them personally, right? And their ideas have been passed on for so many centuries, we don't know what they still said and what they didn't say. But I perceive both Buddha and Jesus as pure. But then the more recent examples, the people that I, feel deeply influenced by and deeply admire, you know, Peace Pilgrim, for example, pure. I think probably those of you who recently saw Tess Hughes probably saw that purity there in Tess Hughes. Ramana Maharshi, purity. And when I see that purity, I feel, yes, that's it. That's it. That's it. And I want the purity of it, the purity of truth, not truth still mixed with ego, which is what I think is sometimes being displayed. Not that there isn't some realization there, not that there haven't been some shifts there. All right, let's listen to the journal entry again. I and the world are two. As long as there is I, Regina in this case, and the world, there is ignorance. Angry I and the world is ignorance. But joyous I and the world is ignorance. Even spacious I and the world is ignorance. And you can see that that really represents some shifts that may have happened, right? Anger might have been the starting ground for the person. And then, you know, through some spiritual work, there's a more joyous experience. And through additional spiritual work and shifts, there's even a more spacious experience. But the ego is not yet dead. As Michael Langford would say, Manonasa has not occurred. You know, Ramana Maharshi, somewhere I read Ramana Maharshi saying, as long as there is still one thought that is believed, as long as there is still one thought that is believed, and I don't remember the exact wording of the quote, but the idea that I remember getting out of the contemplation of the quote was, not only am I not done, but from that one idea, giving attention to that one idea, more ideas can again spurn, right? Can spawn off of it, right? So it's not complete. So angry I in the world is ignorance. Joyous I and the world is ignorance. Spacious I and the world is ignorance. I may experience many shifts and changes as the mind accepts spiritual teaching and realization as truth. As mind observes its own shifts, and again, these shifts can be genuine shifts, and mind is fully recognizing the difference in the experience, which is a genuine difference in the experience. But mind is still there. Mind still thinks I, right? So as mind observes its own shifts, it may perceive itself as enlightened. Now, an enlightened mind may be somewhat reflective of truth. Like I said, more joyous, more spacious, and these are definitely qualities of truth. But reflection is not that which it reflects, right? When you look in the mirror and you see the reflection of your face, that's not you, that's the reflection of you. So a reflection is not that which it reflects. And a reflection that believes it is that which it reflects is still deluded. So stay clear. I, the person, right, at best, is reflecting its source. The source itself knows only itself. So when there is no I, when what I am is the source itself, there's no personal I anymore, there's no mental concept I anymore. Right? When I am the source, then I know the self. And not until. I'm pulling up yesterday's lesson from A Course in Miracles. It seems like there's something in there I might want to talk about, but I don't know till I get there. This is called Following Intuition. Spontaneous moment. Oh, yes. Okay, so yesterday, lesson 62, forgiveness is my function as the light of the world. But what we were asked to say to ourselves is, forgiveness is my function as the light of the world. I would fulfill my function that I may be happy. And just now it happened again when I said that. So here's what happened. When I say yesterday's workbook lesson to myself, where the heart tickles, right, is on the word fulfill. Forgiveness is my function as the light of the world. I would fulfill, complete, not partial, right? I would fulfill my function that I may be happy. I remember once upon a time when I had that guidance, I had that job in the Boston area, and I had that guidance to quit my job and move. And any of you all who have ever heard this story, you know that I was terrified. I mean, I had no idea how my daughter and I would survive if I was not working for money, because I was raised to believe working for money is how you survive, right? So I was terrified, not only for me, but for my daughter. But during this period of time when I had not yet completely accepted the guidance, and I was in a consideration period of whether I would say yes to the guidance or not, an idea came to me. This felt like like Holy Spirit, as we would say. It's a Holy Spirit idea. An idea came to me, and the idea was of the old game show, Let's Make a Deal. And if you guys remember Let's Make a Deal, people in the audience were able to trade something that they had in their purse. You know, maybe they had a stapler, and, you know, he says, who has a stapler? And some lady says, I do. And he says, let me see the stapler. And he says, great. Now, if you can trade your stapler for what's behind door number one, door number two, or door number three. And, of course, you never know what's behind these doors. It could be a magnificent prize, or I remember sometimes it was just a rubber chicken hanging on a string. That was the big dud prize. Ugh, nothing. Or a lady might be standing there with $2 or, you know, something not very good. And in the show, you know, the lady might trade the stapler for what's behind door number one, and she might get a washer and dryer. She's like, ooh, yay! She's all excited. And then Bob Barker would say, okay, now, You can keep your washer and dryer, or I'll let you trade for what's behind door number two. And we don't know if door number two is better. You know, maybe it's a big, expensive car, which is better than a washer and dryer financially. Or it could be the rubber chicken hanging on a string. You don't know. And the lady's like, oh, do I trade my washer and dryer, which is a really good prize, for what's behind door number two? Well, that image was brought to me during this time of not being sure whether I would quit my job and move, as Holy Spirit was guiding me to at the time. And the idea came that my life that I had built for myself, my secular life, was like the washer and dryer. It was a good life. And I could keep the washer and dryer if I wanted to. I understood that. I wasn't forced to follow this guidance. I was being asked if I wanted to trade my washer and dryer for what was behind door number two. And when that image came to me, I realized that now I had to say yes, not out of coercion, but just out of a realization that if I didn't trade for what was behind door number two, I could never be fully satisfied, never fully happy again, because I would always wonder what was behind door number two. Like, I had to trade my washer and dryer life for door number two just to find out what it was. Well, I have that same feeling now about striving for men on NASA. Right? I mean, I have no idea what men on NASA is. You know, I've read all of Michael Langford's descriptions and Nisargadatta's descriptions and Ramana's descriptions, but the mind can't really grasp it. We all know that. I have no idea what man on NASA is. We'll call that door number three, because I've already traded for door number two, so I'm standing here with what I got from behind door number two, and it's pretty good. I like this life that I got when I followed that guidance and joined Holy Spirit's team. It's a good life. But now I'm being asked if I want to trade for what's behind door number three. Do I want to trade this really good life? You know, happier than I was before. You know? Do I want to trade this for what's behind door number three? And it's that same feeling, like if I don't, I can never quite be fully satisfied with this, because I'm always going to wonder what was behind door number three. What if I had given my attention to striving for men on NASA? No ego. Not just an ego that's more reflective of truth than it once was, which I'd say is what I have now. That's what I got from door number two. What if I go for that no ego? What if I go for that which I actually think very few people have realized, because I think most have been satisfied with, you know, this, I'll call it, relative awakening. Relative meaning definitely more awake than I once was. Right? Comparatively speaking, I'm awake. Right? What if instead of being satisfied with relative awakening, I decide to just go for man on NASA? And the answer is, I have to. I have to. Not because I'm being coerced, but because I can never be fully satisfied if I don't. And with that, my time is up, and I'm releasing the mic. Bye-bye.